Yeah, we definitely are seeing a downward decreasing trend in the number of commercial operational fatalities in the industry.
For only the second time on record, Alaska had no fatal accidents among commercial fishers. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, November 30th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a huge elder fraud case comes to a close.
These individuals, the Siglers, they took 63% of all of the assets that NEVA had on hand.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
What if accessing your personal and family immunization records was as easy as checking your phone? The Docket app is a secure option that allows Alaskans to quickly access their immunization records. Need immunization records for school or travel? Docket makes it simple and is available for download from the App Store or Google Play Store. Learn more at vaccinationrecords.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Federal safety investigators are calling for new, more restrictive regulations on flight seeing tours in the Ketchikan area after a series of crashes. The National Transportation Safety Board says previous approaches focused on voluntary compliance have proven ineffective at addressing the unique hazards of flying in the area. KRBD's Eric Stone reports.
The agency's 20-page report calls on the Federal Aviation Administration to impose specific regulations for Ketchikan air tours above and beyond what's normally required. The NTSB says it's looking to prevent pilots from being caught in clouds unexpectedly without the equipment necessary to navigate them. Large commercial airliners carry specialized instruments that allow them to fly in low visibility conditions, but small flight seeing planes typically operate under so-called visual flight rules. That is, they rely on what pilots can see out the window. The report highlights 7 fatal flight seeing crashes in the Ketchikan area since 2007 that killed a total of 31 people and injured another 13. 3 of those crashes involved flying into poor weather conditions and crashing into terrain, including the most recent crash in Misty Fjords National Monument Wilderness last year. Those 3 crashes resulted in 20 deaths. Current regulations on air tours require visibility of at least 2 miles when clouds are less than 1,000 feet above the ground. Pilots must also fly at least 500 feet above ground level. But Ketchikan is more complex. NTSB Chair Jennifer Homendy said in a news release that the area's fast-changing weather and mountainous terrain present, quote, unique but well-understood safety hazards. The report asks the FAA to work with the National Weather Service to come up with more conservative weather standards for flight seeing tours in Ketchikan and require specialized training. The board also asks the FAA to require air tour operators to comply with a 2009 agreement that standardizes tour routes, provides alternate flight paths on poor weather days, and encourages pilots to relay poor conditions. That agreement is voluntary, and even though the air carrier involved in last year's crash had signed on, the pilot was not following the designated route at the time of the crash, according to the NTSB. A ProPublica report last year highlighted that Alaska makes up a growing share of the country's crashes involving small commercial aircraft. The NTSB says specific regulations issued for other high-risk locales like the Grand Canyon and Hawaii have improved flight seeing safety. The NTSB investigates crashes but doesn't have the power to issue binding rules. That's why it's calling on the FAA to impose new regulations. In a statement, the FAA said it takes the safety board's recommendations seriously and will respond within an appropriate time frame. The FAA said improving aviation safety in Alaska is one of its top priorities. The agency highlighted what it called a sweeping examination of safety issues in Alaska aviation conducted last year. That includes better weather data and forecasting, expanded satellite-based air traffic control coverage, improved navigation charts, and new GPS-guided routes that allow pilots to fly at lower altitudes to avoid dangerous ice buildup. The agency said it meets every spring with air tour operators to discuss lessons learned and recommendations and reminders ahead of the coming season. But the NTSB says those actions fall short of what's necessary to protect pilots and passengers. One Ketchikan aviation heavyweight, Takwan Air, offered support for stricter regulations. In a statement, Takwan executive Krista Hagen said the airline, quote, supports the concept of a rulemaking process as a focused effort to enhance safety. If the FAA decides to take action, Hagen said the airline would welcome the opportunity to actively participate in the rulemaking process. Other Ketchikan flight seeing operators said they were reviewing the NTSB's recommendations. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Eric Stone.
The Alaska Division of Elections certified this month's general election today. Candidates now have until the end of the day Monday, December 5th, to request a recount. In a recount, ballots for a particular race are counted again using scanners in Juneau, according to Division Director Gail Funumiai. One precinct is also randomly selected to be hand-counted, which is a way of validating the results against the scanners. The state pays for a recount in races in which candidates are separated by less than 0.5% of the vote. Otherwise, the candidate requesting the recount foots the bill. While many races have close margins of a few hundred votes or less, the closest is in House District 15, where Republican incumbent Tom McKay leads Democrat Denny Wells by just 4 votes. Wells did not respond to requests for comment about whether he plans to request a recount. There were no fatalities within Alaska's commercial fishing fleets this year for only the second time on record. And as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, the U.S. Coast Guard says the credit belongs to the fishermen themselves.
For the first time since 2015, Alaska has gone a year without a commercial fishing death. The Coast Guard says in the 12-month period that ended September 30th, no one died falling overboard in an on-deck accident or on a sinking ship. Scott Wilwert is the Coast Guard's Commercial Fishing Vessel Safety Coordinator. He says fatalities have been cut almost in half over the last decade.
You know, from 1990 to 1999, we had 210 what we would classify as operational commercial fishing fatalities in Alaska. And in the 10-year period from 2000 to 2009, that dropped from 210 to 107. And then from 2010 to 2019, down to 62.
Wilwert says there have been just 10 commercial fishing deaths in Alaska since 2020.
So, yeah, we definitely are seeing a downward decreasing trend in the number of commercial operational fatalities in the industry.
But what exactly is causing that downward shift? Wilwert says it's a combination of changing fishery regulations and an industry culture focused on preventing accidents.
I believe that, you know, the fishermen that I come in contact with and all our examiners come in contact with are much more safety conscious. They understand the risks. They take the preparations, and that's a big piece of the puzzle.
Wilwert says that's a sharp contrast to the 70s and 80s, when short openings encouraged captains to fish in an all-out sprint, sometimes sacrificing safety.
The way that fishermen now in certain sectors are able to some extent, choose when they want to go out, maybe skip a weather window or look for a better weather window, as opposed to the old Derby days when, you know, back in the 70s and 80s when, overloading or deck loading with fish or overloading with gear because you only had 4 or 6 or 8 days to catch all the crab or the halibut or whatever.
Wilwert emphasized how important it is for mariners to stay up to date on safety recommendations and equipment and to take part in the dockside exams offered by the Coast Guard before it's too late.
The time to learn how to use any of that stuff is not at the moment of truth.
Tracy Welch is the executive director of United Fishermen of Alaska.
We're a big industry, but in a way, we're a really small industry. Everybody knows somebody who knows somebody, right? And so those deaths are tragic.
Welch says she also thinks things have changed over the last few decades when it comes to education.
I think with the younger generation of fishermen coming in and moving towards more rationalized fisheries as opposed to the Derby-style fisheries, it's given people a chance to focus on safety and making sure that people make it home at the end of the day.
Welch says she hopes the trend continues. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a new documentary about energy resilience, and it stars Sitka.
We're looking for examples of Americans who are, working across party lines, working in ways that might be surprising.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Sneezing, aching, sweating, and coughing. Who has the time for this misery? You have the power to protect yourself and your community. Boost your defenses this season by getting the flu vaccine. Protect yourself and family. Learn more at vaccinate.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
A Ketchikan man reported missing last week was seen on surveillance footage falling into the water near the city's downtown cruise ship berths and is believed to be dead, according to police. In an email, Ketchikan Police Chief Jeff Walls says video shows 32-year-old Rex Sowell falling into the water near Berth 3 on Ketchikan's cruise ship docks on November 19th. He was last seen that night at the Arctic Bar, which sits just opposite the berth. Sowell was reported missing 3 days later on November 22nd. Walls says police found the surveillance footage showing Sowell's fall on Friday, November 25th, and started to search the Tongass Narrows along with the Ketchikan Harbor Master and the Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad. Walls said that because Sowell had fallen nearly a week before, the purpose of the search was to recover the man's body. The search did not locate Sowell, according to the rescue squad. Walls says Sowell was alone when he fell in, and there are no signs of foul play. He says investigators believe his level of intoxication played a part in the fall. Walls said police have been in touch with Sowell's mother throughout the search. He said the department delayed its public announcement to allow her to return home and inform family members. A former Alaska couple has been ordered to pay nearly $1.5 million for taking money from a Yakutat elder. As Coast Alaska's Angela Denning reports, the couple took hundreds of thousands of dollars and used it to retire early and buy a home in Texas.
A decade ago, former Tanana Superintendent of Schools Carla Sigler and her husband, Vernon James Sigler, approached a friend with a big ask. The couple wanted $250,000 to put towards Carla's retirement. Their friend, 86-year-old Yakutat elder Neva Ogle, agreed to lend the Siglers the money. They were all living in Yakutat at the time and knew each other well. In a handshake deal, Ogle wrote the couple a check. The Siglers started repaying Ogle $1,000 a month. A year or so later, Ogle approached them in an attempt to get the money back, but they asked for more. They told Ogle that the $250,000 wasn't enough and that they needed another $50,000. The Siglers later cashed a check for $450,000 that they said in court was a gift. But Ogle hadn't written it. The state later presented evidence that it was Carla Sigler who wrote the check, even though Ogle signed it. That's according to Beth Goldstein, an attorney with the state's Office of Public Advocacy.
So when it comes down to it, what we learned throughout this lawsuit was that these individuals, the Siglers, they took 63% of all of the assets that Neva had on hand, not counting her house.
Shortly after receiving the second check, the Siglers moved from Yakutat to Bosque County, Texas, where they purchased a 5-bedroom house with a swimming pool, all with Ogle's money. Carla Sigler was elected Bosque County Treasurer in 2016. Goldstein says the couple had made Ogle many promises.
They would pay her back when they sold the auto business. They'd pay her back when they sold. They had a house in Fairbanks. They had a house in Yakutat. Neva received no funds from any of the sales of these things.
When Ogle was 88, about a year later, she went to the local police in Yakutat, who recorded her. She told officers that the checks were loans that she wanted to get back. She wanted her heirs to have something when she was gone. Goldstein says this police recording was vital to the case.
The Yakutat Police Department was instrumental in finding this recording, and even though none of the officers were currently with the department anymore, they did come back and testify for us, and they were fantastic.
The police told Ogle to get something in writing, so she went to the couple, who happened to be in Yakutat at the time, and Carla Sigler drafted an agreement, which Ogle signed. That was April of 2014. The agreement had no minimum payments and forgave the debt upon death.
And it was completely in Carla's favor, completely contrary to what we heard Neva wanted in the tape.
Months later, when the couple moved to Texas, Ogle went to an attorney and filed a lawsuit. She'd been forced to sell her home and move into an assisted living facility after she had spent much of her remaining savings on living expenses. The state of Alaska got involved when, in 2016, a bank notified them that Ogle was giving money to a scammer. State attorneys filed for a conservatorship, if nothing else, to stop the bleeding. Shortly afterward, the state found out about her private lawsuit and offered to step in as the plaintiff. The state filed civil elder fraud charges against the Siglers. A 5-day bench trial was held in March, and Juneau Superior Court Judge Daniel Shalley entered a final judgment against the couple on November 13th. They were ordered to pay back Ogle's $700,000 loan with interest and pay $450,000 in punitive damages, plus attorney's fees. All told, the judgment totals $1.47 million. Ogle died in 2020, while the case was still pending. Her heirs are expected to get about $1 million of the judgment. The couple has never admitted to any wrongdoing, according to court documents. Goldstein says the case is not uncommon.
We see cases all the time like this. A lot of times it's family members getting the elder to sign something, a quitclaim deed or a power of attorney, or just, you know, loaning money under the parameters where they're never going to get paid back, ever.
She says it's important for seniors and the people who care for them to learn to recognize the signs of fraud. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning.
As Mauna Loa on Hawaii's Big Island continues to spew smoke and lava, many Alaskans with plans to travel to Hawaii are keeping a nervous eye on the volcano. Tyson Davis, the lead singer for Blackwater Railroad, says he and his band should arrive on the Big Island tonight and hope to see the volcano as they land in Kona. Davis says his band seems to have a natural audience in Hawaii. It's Blackwater's fifth trip to the Big Island.
The reason why we kind of got a foothold over there is because there is a lot of Alaskans over there. And we were able to, like, kind of fill up venues with just, like, Alaskans that were there either, like, for the winter or on vacation or working there for the winter.
Davis says he's been tracking the volcano and its impact on various websites. So far, he and his band are proceeding as planned. Scott McMurrin, an Alaska travel expert, says Blackwater is part of a wave of Alaskans headed to Hawaii.
I just talked to a friend of mine today. Her whole office has rented a house over there on the Big Island. They're having a company retreat. This is the thing.
McMurrin says before the pandemic, the annual December migration of Alaskans to Hawaii made for a busy season. But to lure travelers back, Alaska Airlines added some incentives.
It's really cheap right now to go to Kona. And these are Black Friday, Cyber Monday deals that end on the 30th, but as low as $147 each way from Anchorage nonstop to Kona.
McMurrin says Alaska Airlines will add more nonstop flights to Hawaii in mid-December and offer daily flights at the start of the year. He says the eruptions could cause flight delays or cancellations, so if you're going to Hawaii, stay in close touch with hotels and other businesses that are part of your travel plans.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
the Westmark Fairbanks Hotel and Conference Center, located in downtown Fairbanks, featuring hot breakfast, Wi-Fi, and a fitness center. Reservations at westmarkhotels.com. Do you need health insurance? United Way Healthcare Navigators are here to help you understand your new Affordable Care Act coverage options and opportunity for savings. You can call 211 or text GETCOVEREDAK to 898-211 to connect to a healthcare navigator. Enrollment is open now through January 15th. Call 211 today. This message sponsored by United Way of Anchorage.
After years of budget cuts to Alaska's public university system, there aren't many higher education programs that are growing. But on Tuesday, the coalition Recover Alaska announced it had put together $1.5 million to dramatically expand enrollment for master's degree students at the University of Alaska Anchorage's School of Social Work. Recover Alaska works to reduce excessive alcohol use and harm. It's identified a chronic shortage of qualified social workers as a key issue, perpetuating the state's worst-in-the-nation status for alcohol-attributed deaths. Tiffany Hall is Recover Alaska's executive director.
For a person in active addiction, it is incredibly challenging to admit the problem and ask for help. When they do, we need to be ready. But a lack of qualified providers throughout our state prevents people from accessing help when they need it.
Right now, UAA's School of Social Work has capacity for 35 students seeking master's degrees with a clinical license. The plan is to step up enrollment gradually up to 85 students 5 years from now. The South Central Foundation is one of the grantees and one of the biggest employers of behavioral health and substance use treatment providers in the state. Michelle Baker, an executive with the Alaska Native-owned nonprofit healthcare organization, says the lack of qualified social workers stresses the existing system and hampers expansion.
South Central Foundation alone has 20 master's level therapist vacancies, primarily due to 4 program expansions that we've launched in the last year.
Diane Kaplan with the Rasmussen Foundation says her institution and others that contributed are all potential employers. Someone with a master's degree in social work can work in a variety of settings, from philanthropy to preventative therapy to crisis care.
Employer-led initiatives like this are appealing to potential students because they know there's a job at the end of the education, and a choice of jobs, and good jobs, and well-paying jobs, in a competitive environment in the state for employees.
The grant money is a one-time gift, but university officials say the expanded master's program will be financially self-sustaining through student tuition. Other donors include Primera, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, Providence, Alaska, the Anchorage Assembly, the Alaska Department of Health, and the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. Sitka is the central character in a new documentary about energy resilience. The film is part of the Made in America series produced by Washington, D.C.-based Consensus Digital Media. The filmmakers view Sitka's relative self-sufficiency as a model for a more sustainable energy future elsewhere. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
Like many communities in Alaska, Sitka produces its own power, but it's among very few communities that produce power almost exclusively with renewables and is hoping to do even more. That put it on the radar of Consensus Digital Media, which produces a series about American innovation called Made in America. Consensus creative director and producer Kate Tucker says the film project featuring Sitka didn't sound very sexy at first, but it quickly snowballed.
We were looking at energy storage, something not, you know, maybe you want to watch a whole episode about, but it turns out that you have some really exciting innovations happening there.
The film ties modern energy resiliency to culture. It opens with Tlingit culture bearer Chuck Miller.
My Tlingit name is Dana Chilseq, and I got that from my great uncle. My English name is Chuck Miller. I'm of the Raven Moiety, Silver Salmon clan. We refer to our clan as the Coho clan. We don't waste anything. We take what we need and we leave the rest. And if we take too much, which is not on purpose, we share with everybody. We share no matter what, but we make sure.
The narrative shifts to Miller describing the struggle to maintain the furnace in the Alaska Native Brotherhood Founders Hall, where he attended culture classes, and the decision to invest in heat pumps. In addition, the story describes other ways Sitka's electric utility is exploring to capture its excess hydropower and transform it into commodities like zero-carbon fuel, fertilizer, and heat. Tucker says Sitka's approach to community-based problem-solving transcends politics and made it an attractive subject for the series.
We're looking for examples of Americans who are, you know, working across party lines, working in ways that might be surprising, working in ways that can help us come together around shared values and, you know, working with to solve problems that have been overly politicized, and really we can't afford to let that happen.
The 9-member crew from Consensus filmed in Sitka and Juneau last August. The weather mostly cooperated, but the ferry schedule did not, and they chartered an Allen Marine catamaran for the day trip from Juneau to Sitka. The unscheduled tour through the remote country of the Inside Passage provided context for how isolated Sitka is and how determined it is to stick around.
Oh, well, look, there's this town that's doing it all, you know, and it's doing it in a way that's like ensuring their survival and is absolutely necessary, you know, for their to build resilience for the future. And we can learn something there. Plus, we got to take a 5-hour boat ride and see whales.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Well, it's river eel season on the Kuskokwim River, and as KYUK's Francisco Martinez Cuello reports, subsistence fishermen are lining up to catch their fill.
For over a week, Tuluksac resident and subsistence fisherman Nikolai Napolka has been traveling 4 miles down the Kuskokwim River. Sometimes he goes by himself, other times with his friends, but he always has an ice pick at the ready to carve rectangular blocks out of the ice. Once he's got a hole, he uses a 4-foot stick with a bunch of nails at the end as an eel rake.
We've been going out at least a week of doing it, and that's the longest run. And I had another phone call that Kuiklik was dipping last night. So that probably the second run is about to reach here.
He says right now they're more active in the evenings. and they've been running for several days.
A run means it's usually previous years we've been dipping like only like 2 days and they're all gone. Mm-hmm. And they just pass, but this is the longest run we've been dipping this year.
These river eels, also known as Arctic lamprey, are headed upriver.
And then they just kind of hang out and wait until spring arrives and water warms up and then move in and spawn. And they're like salmon. They're semiparous, so they spawn after they die.
That's Trent Sutton. He's a fisheries biology professor at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He says it's not clear how long these river eels' runs will last. Usually scientists rely on data from another river.
Most of what I know about Arctic lamprey is based on this sort of activity that takes place in the Yukon River, because the activity in the Kuskokwim is a subsistence fishery, and the Yukon is a combination of both a subsistence and a commercial fishery. And so there's quite a bit more data available and information on that.
Nikolai Napoka says subsistence can mean a lot of things. For instance, providing for elders.
If like an elderly people, because back then they used to eat them, so we just give them some away. So then, bring back their memories, what they used to eat when they were younger.
But that's not all.
I mostly hear people just snacking them, because they're rich, really rich in fat. Even if you fry them or bake them, the oil will seep out, a lot of oil, because you gotta dip the oil off of it when you're cooking them. I like them more baked than fried. There's a lot of ways that people that cooks them. Mm-hmm. But I like them more baked. We cut them up and store them and put them in Ziploc and freeze them up. Some with a lot of dogs, because they have lots of protein, lots of fat. They've been dipping them for their dogs for this winter.
Basically, he doesn't expect this bumper run to go to waste. In Bethel, I'm Francisco Martinez Cuello.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Eric Stone and Reagan Miller in Ketchikan, Kavitha George and Jeremy Shea in Anchorage, Angela Denning in Petersburg, Robert Woolsey in Sitka, and Francisco Martinez Cuello in Bethel. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde, Katie Anastas is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil exploration and production and working to create economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.